Welcome, everyone. I'm joined today by my good friend and fellow COGS student, Matthew Siu. Matthew is a third year in the COGS program in the psychology stream. He is currently a member of the CSS executive team, holding the position of VP Industry. He is also a teaching assistant for Cognitive Systems 300. Matt, welcome to the COGScast. Thank you for being here.
Hey, Armin. Thanks for the introduction, and happy to be on the podcast.
So, Matt, tell me, how did you get into COGS?
Oh, well, interesting story. I actually had a great teacher in high school who taught AP Psych, and that was my first kind of foray into psychology, which is a large part of cognitive systems. So when I was like looking for majors and things like that, was looking for something that maybe kind of blended computer science and psychology, mostly two subjects I'm really interested in. And cognitive systems was one of them. I think also for myself and maybe for others as well, I think cognitive systems is kind of a major for those who can't really decide.
Yeah, definitely.
And enjoy a lot of things. So I find that personally, a lot of people that I meet in COGS are really curious and have a wide variety of interests, which is so cool.
So you said you found COGS through essentially how most of us do, not knowing what to do, and then we kind of just wander into it. But what kept you in the major? Because, you know, lots of times it happens that you go into a program and then you realize, oh, I really don't like this. So what kept you in COGS?
Well, as I just mentioned earlier, like with COGS, you get to touch so many different topics. And there's a lot of freedom in this major, especially at UBC, to kind of design the major to be to focus on the things that you're interested in. So I think like if I had maybe chosen something like psychology or computer science only, there'd be a higher chance of me maybe switching. But since I have the freedom to just design it however I want, there's no real reason to switch.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you bring that up, because that seems to be a very common theme among COG students, this this interdisciplinary aspect and being able to sort of combine different areas under one sort of common theme. So what are some of your interests that lie within COGS?
A lot. I think a lot of people like talking about AI, and I think that's incredibly interesting. There's so many different things you can do. I think the Internet of Things revolution, a lot of these ideas that I'm interested in, they kind of all end up like connecting in some way. So like with IoT, there's this entire revolution of smart devices. And the idea is that if you kind of embed artificial intelligence into these items, they can kind of do things for you in the physical world that, and you don't even need to touch them. So for example, I think Google came out with the Nest thermostat. So that's like a really basic example of this type of AI, IoT combining. And then another topic that I became more interested in this past year is blockchain. And we could talk about that more throughout the podcast, but yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think blockchain is definitely one of those things that's becoming increasingly prevalent in our society. And I mean, blockchain is everywhere in the news right now. So could you maybe give our listeners and me, because I don't know that much about blockchain, sort of give us a history of blockchain, how it started, and kind of what it is?
Yeah, for sure. So I guess today, stepping back a little bit, just looking at the systems that we use today, the internet and things like that, today we kind of interact through a lot of centralized systems. So for example, you have your bank, they hold your money. There's a lot of government institutions that you interact with for plenty of things. Medical records may be stored with like your hospital. And a lot of our personal lives are shared on these social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And these are all that information is stored with like a single institution. And it's what it provides you as a consumer is convenience. You don't have to, like they're so easy to set up. You log in with Facebook and you have all this functionality. It's so easy. But what happens is all this information that companies like maybe Facebook, recently there was the event that happened with Facebook and Cambridge Analytica.
Right,
have you heard of it?
Yeah.
So what basically happened was a third party application was able to access a large amount of the data on Facebook, and they designed advertisements that they designed basically psychological profiles of each person on Facebook and then designed advertisements to target them to change their behavior. So that's like one of the problems that blockchain, I think, is trying to solve, this permission of information. When you have people doing things with your data and manipulating you yourself without you even knowing,
right?
That's a problem.
It's a big problem, not to mention highly unethical. Mm-hmm. So it seems like blockchain is taking the power away from these sort of institutions and the middlemen between you and your money or you and your health records, and kind of giving that power back to you. So what sort of structure is involved in this? How does blockchain work? What does blockchain do that allows it to give you back the power and sort of decentralize this?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question, Omran. And I think it's something that took me a long time to understand. And I think I'm only at the tip of the iceberg, honestly. But from what I've learned, blockchain basically is just a database. And so I think a lot of people are familiar with like Bitcoin and things like this. So
That's
one aspect of that you could use a database for. You mm-hmm. could use it to kind of keep track of the money. But anything that databases are used today, blockchain could also be used for. So it's there's a wide variety of things. But as for what blockchain is exactly, it's a novel method for securing a database without a centralized party. But how does it do that? Mm-hmm. Basically, you can imagine let's just take the idea of Bitcoin that most people are familiar with. People are like transacting and things like that. But what happens is this, the blockchain, basically, you take a bunch of these transactions and you cryptographically secure them. And this takes a lot of computing power.
Right.
And what you get at the end is you get like this single hash that identifies a block.
Okay.
And basically, why is that secure? What happens is when these blocks start piling up, so you take a block, you put a bunch of transactions in it, mm-hmm. and then you do the exact same thing for the next set of transactions, but you also reference the hash of the previous block. So all that information goes into creating this unique identifier for a block. And then basically what happens is, let's say someone goes back into this database and changes some of the information in some block on this long chain of blocks.
Right.
All of the blocks after it that referenced that identifier
anymore.
They aren't going to match. They're going to get messed up. And anyone can actually go back and change. But why are they not able to basically hack the system? It's because each block requires a certain amount of computational work.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you change a block in the past, you need to also create new blocks for all of the other transactions that happened after it.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, it's a lot of computational work, and it's just basically the reason why blockchain is so secure is because no one has the computational power to do that on their own right now.
Interesting. So okay, so let's kind of step back here and give our listeners kind of a visual image of what this blockchain sort of looks like. So if I'm understanding this correctly, we're going from a sort of system where we have the individual and the information which they want or access or store, and they have an institution. So you mentioned banking, where you have your money, and then you have the bank that holds your money, and then they release it, and there's, you know, all of these different things, right? So is it kind of like the way that Wikipedia has sort of decentralized information? So like in the olden days, if you wanted to learn something, maybe like, you know, the anatomy of the heart, you would go to the library and maybe like pull out an encyclopedia. Or even before they were available in the library, you would probably have to have a subscription. So the same way that we went from this like encyclopedia and having to have access to it, and Wikipedia sort of took that and decentralized it, and now everyone has access to it and everyone edits it. Is that a good analogy to understanding what blockchain is doing?
I think it's a good analogy for aspects of the blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if I can elaborate on my answer previously.
Please.
Now you have this secure database,
mm-hmm.
And I forgot to mention this database gets propagated. So anyone can kind of hold this database and then look at all the transactions and make sure that they're legit. So
right.
Basically what you get is transparency. You get security via the processes that I just explained. And then also, basically, you... Okay, so there's also this idea of, like, public and private keys. So, like, you can imagine, let's say there's just, like, an Excel sheet. Like, imagine this database is just an Excel sheet, and you are identified by, like, some public key.
Okay.
And it could be a series of numbers and letters.
Right.
And then, basically... That public key, like in that row on the Excel sheet, it also identifies an amount of Bitcoin that you hold.
Okay.
Now, the only way that that number can change in the Excel sheet is if you change it. So, with your private key, so you would sign a transaction.
Right.
And then this would allow you to maybe send money to someone else or receive money or send money. So yeah. So basically, what you're getting is transparency, security. And you have the permission, you have the power to give data, give money, currency, like these things to anyone you want.
Okay, thanks. That's actually a really good explanation. So we know, sort of, as you mentioned earlier, one of the applications of blockchain is something like Bitcoin, which is a cryptocurrency, and that seems to be very popular in the media nowadays. But if I'm understanding the blockchain correctly, it seems like the things that it can apply to seems very, very wide, way past something like cryptocurrency. So what are some other things that you would say blockchain can improve?
Good question. I think that's a pretty broad question, because fundamentally what you're getting is a new type of database that doesn't require a centralized provider. Like Facebook or the government or any of these other groups.
Right.
So I think money, just because there is an inherent level of greed that everyone has, it was really good first example use case of this blockchain technology. And it was good because we need more people to adopt it. Otherwise, it's useless. Network effects and things like this. But now that people hold the currency, they have access, or as people build applications, this is still a very new technology. There's so much more to... explore and build, but as now that people hold the currency, they're able to try a bunch of different applications out there. So people are trying games, they're making games, but I think the thing that I'm as of recent been most excited about is an ability to create peer-to-peer networks. So you can imagine that now with this blockchain you can own your own data and your own money. With this now, you can kind of step away from all these middlemen that we always had to interact with.
Right.
So for example, data, or our data was stored with like Facebook, and they were like this centralized provider. Everyone interacts with Facebook. But now, for example, I can't remember the name, but there's like a new social network that's popping up that's very similar to Facebook.
Okay.
But basically, people can kind of form their own little networks, and they don't need to interact through like some centralized database, and they can share their information and give permission to people through that.
Okay, it's very interesting. So I think that I recall seeing something in the news about, you know, I can't remember which country it was. I feel like it was somewhere in Africa, but I can't remember right now. But I remember seeing in the news that a country used blockchain to do its sort of presidential vote. So how do you know how that works? Can you explain to us how that works?
Do you mean how it would work on like a blockchain or something, like
using
these new technologies?
So there was this article that basically talked about how this country used blockchain technology for their voting. So I didn't really understand how that works. And I think many people probably don't. I think many people just see blockchain as, like, they see blockchain as synonymous to cryptocurrency. And as you just mentioned, there is a lot more to it. So I was just wondering, does it sort of, so when you vote, is it just basically using the same structure as any other blockchain, and it's just because of the security reasons, or is there something special about the blockchain they'll be using for voting? Like, does the structure change at all depending on what you're using it for?
No. So the underlying, like, blockchain database remains the same.
Okay.
Something that I didn't mention previously was that this database also comes with like a programming language on top of it. So you can kind of create rules for how you interact with the database and change like how much money this person has, how much money this person has. But as I said before, the database can store other things. So it can store maybe someone's vote on maybe some new piece of legislation. So how that would work is like you would have to verify each person to like some identity, some address,
right? So
address
like
on
you
the
mentioned earlier with like a personal identity, like a number or something.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. So once you have someone verified, like one-to-one relationship to some address on the blockchain,
right?
Now it's simple enough. Many people, even like Africa is actually, I think, one of the, like that entire continent seems to be adopting mobile first, which is really, really cool. So everyone has these cheap mobile phones. They're able to connect to the internet. And now what you get is an opportunity to kind of have more of a direct democracy, which is really cool because it wasn't possible before. You can imagine like when people are like filling out paper ballots and things like that, to collect the votes of every single person in that country would take forever. So basically, now that you have this database that you can update and you have all these people who are verified on that database, each person is able to instantaneously vote for different legislation. And it seems like that is going to have a really big effect because, you know, like today, sometimes maybe the people who represent you in government maybe don't represent your views correctly because they're representing such a large amount of people. You can never represent everyone exactly right. So this is an opportunity for people to get their voice out, and I think that's a really cool.
I think it seems to me, so seeing as blockchain is a sort of an artificial network that's coded using a computer, I would be right in assuming that you could cast a vote from your mobile device or your laptop as well, right, using the blockchain network.
Exactly.
So I think that's really cool because one of the problems we have right now with one of the problems we're having in Canada, one of the problems we are having in the United States, I mean, Australia has even, you know, they've made voting mandatory to counteract this problem of voter turnout. And one of the reasons voters aren't turning out is, I mean, there are many reasons, but one of the reasons is they're simply the lack of their ability to get to the polling stations, right? So you can imagine if you live in some remote place and maybe there's only one poll station there. So I think with something like blockchain, I mean, nowadays everyone has some sort of device, whether it be a laptop or a cell phone.
Exactly.
So with blockchain, we're really able to count every single vote. And I think that'll have profound consequences for our democracy.
Yeah. And I think kind of changing topics a little bit, but you were mentioning like these people in remote parts of the world who maybe don't have access to voting, but more so, and I think more important to them as well, is they don't even have access to things like maybe our global economic system, our banking systems and things like that.
Right. Of course.
So there's an opportunity there, and a lot of people are working on really cool projects in this space to help people maybe in developing countries who don't have access to these banks. And banking is incredibly important because let's say you want to start a small business, you want to start anything. Most people don't have the money up front, and you need to take a line of credit.
Right.
And if you're not connected into that banking system, you're not going to be able to get it. So there's opportunities to help people because most people have technology, as you said, computer, cell phone, to get connected. No, and that's going to be very cool.
You touched on something there that I think really is important. We mentioned is this sort of connecting of the world and connecting to sort of developing countries. And one thing that immediately comes to mind is, for example, if you live in the West and maybe you have some family somewhere across the world and you're trying to send money to them. So currently we use stuff like, you know, Western Union and these other institutions where we give them money and then, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that happens in the middle and then your relatives or whatnot get the money on the other side. So I can see with cryptocurrency eventually, but even with blockchain now, this structure can really be streamlined.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be a longer process than most people think because what happens is you need to have institutions on both sides who will convert the cryptocurrency into the local currency. And those things are starting to pop up. But until those happen, even if I, like, let's say you have family in some developing nation that doesn't have access to banking, mm-hmm. and you send them some cryptocurrency to their mobile phone,
right.
they're going to have no way to change it into the currency that they need to interact with their local mm-hmm. yeah, cities and things like that.
So seeing as blockchain is, you know, at least in theory, able to solve so many of our problems, why is it that we're not seeing it just sort of take over the world like the internet did? Is it that it's not? Is it that there's resistance? Or is it that it's just a slow process and we're just expecting, you know, we're expecting it to happen a little too fast?
No, yeah, that's a really, really good question. And one that I've been thinking about a lot recently. I think there's a couple of problems. First of all, for anyone who has tried to get their hands on cryptocurrency, it's actually a pretty difficult process. You might have to go through some website like Coinbase, which is which allows you to convert USD or any other currency to Bitcoin or any of these other cryptocurrencies. But it's not an easy process. And then even once you hold the currency, interacting with the applications that are available right now, the user experience is just not there yet. And there's a lot of new terminology that you have to get used to. You have to get used to interacting in, like, for Ethereum, it'd be like gas and things like this. And so, yeah, there's a lot of those types of things that are kind of holding back the larger population from joining, and especially because applications like Facebook are actually pretty good. And the thing is, most people don't really pay attention that much to, like, privacy. They don't care too much. I think, like, the argument that I hear a lot is, I have nothing to hide, so
yeah.
I'm not very worried about my privacy. So
yeah.
Until, one, people take a little bit more care and mm-hmm. take heed about how important privacy is for mm-hmm. their lives, they're not going to maybe see the advantages of blockchain yet.
Mm-hmm.
And additionally, the user experience has to be better than Facebook
better than
for
what
people
we have
to want
now,
to
right.
move
yeah.
over.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, especially like we mentioned earlier with the whole the Facebook, everything that's going on right now, I think people are starting to become more aware that it's not just about I have nothing to hide, but that the stuff that these people are collecting is very valuable, and it's sort of this data that you're giving paints a picture of you, and this picture can be used to, whether it is to target you to vote for a certain way mm-hmm. or any number of things. So I think increasingly as people become aware of issues like this, they'll move away from the idea that I have nothing to hide to my information is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think an analogy that I like to make is, like, with freedom of speech, like, you might not have anything to say.
Right.
But you still want that option.
Right. It's better to have it and not need to use it than not have it and need to use it. Right?
Yeah.
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 Interesting. So I want to move back a little to the idea of blockchain being decentralized. So my question to you is, should it remain completely decentralized, or would some sort of centralization be valuable?
Good question. I think for the people who are in the space right now, I think many of them, including myself, kind of hope that in the future we'll be able to be completely decentralized, where everyone kind of gets a fair opportunity to have their say, have their vote, things like this. However, it's all experimentation right now. This technology is incredibly new.
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about Bitcoin. There's another one called Ethereum that's also mm-hmm. completely decentralized. But there are other currencies that are trying, like, a combination of having some centralization to help kind of guide the community, mm-hmm. the network, in the direction that they want. And so some level of centralization plus a decentralization. And this technology actually has a lot of applications. Well, some people are trying to use it completely centralized. So there's this idea of, like, private blockchains. So, like, for example, IBM has one. And they're kind of playing around with the technology, but it's completely closed off. It's like a database within their company like any other.
Okay, so it just acts like kind of like their own personal database or ledger or whatnot.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's difficult for me to see exactly why that's useful yet, but there are people kind of experimenting and playing with all different types of, like, combinations of centralization and decentralization.
So you mentioned opportunity in there briefly. So what sort of opportunities are there for people in different fields to either get involved in or contribute to blockchain? I mean, it seems pretty obvious that someone who's a developer can, you know, work on the blockchain and increase its productivity and all this sort of stuff. But how can someone who's, for example, running a business use blockchain? Or how can someone who is an investor use blockchain or contribute to blockchain?
I think there's lot of ways besides just being a developer where you can contribute. For example, every single, there's a lot of startups and companies who are are kind of popping up around this core technology. And while, yes, of course, they need developers, they also need every other position you can imagine. They need marketing people. They need operations people, business people, and all these types of things. As for, did you say, like companies, small businesses, or like owners of
So, I'm someone who owns either a corner shop or a small restaurant, something like that. How can I use blockchain to further my business? Or if not further, make it more efficient? Or what's essentially the advantage? Because what I'm thinking here is that for blockchain to sort of become much more prevalent in society, that's only going to happen. I mean, on the one hand, it's going to happen on these grand scales of like the banking system and the voting system. But also there's another side to it where it's kind of the everyday, the sort of day-to-day person's life and how it'll affect that. So just going back, so to someone who has like a small business and they have a restaurant, how can they use blockchain and how is that going to make their life easier?
So off the top of my head, there's two things that really stand out to me. One is that they can use it to transact monetarily. So that's going to allow them to have more control over their money because, well, I guess one other thing that I would mention is like with banking, and we saw in the 2008 financial crisis, people weren't even able to get their money out of the banks. And it's their money. So what's going to happen is like people now control their own money. But then on the other hand, businesses collect a lot of data. And many times businesses will use some third-party application. They'll integrate it into their system. And that application will provide them like maybe a dashboard of metrics or things like this. But the data is not with them. So let's say they wanted to move to another service provider or use their data in another way, they would have to ask for permission to use the data that they're generating.
Right.
So now as a business, a small business, anything like that, they're going to be able to control their data. And then let's say they want to work with some third party, they can provide that third party permission to look and use some of that data to provide them insights. So
it's
all about
them
giving them power back.
Interesting. Okay, so you mentioned giving power back to the individual, and this brings to mind certain issues that arise often in sort of contracts. And, you know, there are numerous cases. The one that comes easily to mind is between musicians and their managers and how, you know, the musician is making money, but all of a sudden this money disappears and the musician takes the person to court. But, you know, everything checks out because someone has, you know, probably a very good accountant making a lot of money has messed up all these numbers. So it seems to me that blockchain can sort of also take away the opportunity for an accountant to do such a thing.
Yeah, so you mentioned two things there. One, like maybe an accountant kind of messing around with the numbers in the background, and also maybe a dispute about the contract that two people agreed on. So I'll talk about both of those really briefly. On the accounting side, using this public database that's shared with everyone, you'll be able to, one, be able to, as you're kind of working with this person, verify that the transactions are legitimate and agree on them.
Right.
So hopefully and ideally, that problem wouldn't be possible or as easy to do. On the contract side, so, I mean, I guess with we can take the example of the musician and is it the party, the...
Yeah, so I was thinking a lot of times, you know, between a musician and their manager.
And their manager,
They'll have some sort of agreement for, like, you know, for every CD they sell, this is what happens. This is the distribution.
Yeah. So I guess, like, you have to remember, like, law and, like, these types of contracts are kind of like, they're kind of like code, except written in black ink. And what happens is there's this kind of space between what's said on the contract and the interpretation of the contract.
Right.
And
absolutely.
Depending on how people kind of like maybe pick and choose different parts, they can kind of twist the meaning. And this creates disputes where maybe someone's like the artist is like, oh, wait, we agreed on this, but the manager came kind of flips it on them.
Right. It's like, no, we agreed on this.
Yeah, exactly. So like taking this idea that like these contracts written on paper are kind of like a code. Now with this database, with this blockchain database and this programming language on top of it, you can kind of codify these agreements. That's a really, really powerful thing because two people can agree on a terms And then you can write basically a digital contract
right.
that receives all the money, and then depending on the restrictions, it will distribute the money exactly how it was agreed upon when the contract was kind of instantiated.
Okay, right. So there is I think something you mentioned was really important is distributing the money. So it's kind of instantaneous, right? The money comes in, the program runs, and it goes where it needs to go.
Yeah,
and
it's exactly like money comes in, 5% to whatever, 5%,
right.
and then artist gets this much, and then boom, it happens.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So let's move in to the future. You mentioned at the beginning that there is this tremendous need for computational power. So one of the other things that is sort of doing rounds in the news is quantum computing. So I want to ask you, what sort of future do you envision where we have AI, blockchain, and quantum computing?
Okay, that's
a heavy question.
Yeah,
it's a heavy question.
It's a good question. It's kind of a fun one. I guess I'll talk about the quantum computing first because there's a worry that if we solve quantum computing, mm-hmm. this entire blockchain technology that we've created will maybe not be as secure because quantum computers are going to be able to do calculations faster and things like this. And as I mentioned earlier, like the blockchain is secured by a lot of computational work required to create these hashes that mm-hmm. secure each block, and then they are connected, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if a quantum computer comes around, it might be able to make the change on some previous block, mm-hmm. and then it'll be so fast that it'll be able to create, like basically the blockchain, anyone can kind of create these branches,
right.
There's only one that's kind of accepted as the universal, as the database.
Okay.
That's the one that's maybe the longest chain.
Mm-hmm.
So if a quantum computer can do computations faster than regular computers today,
mm-hmm.
they'll be able to create a longer chain of transactions and become like the de facto.
Okay. Right. So the security of the blockchain comes from the fact that it requires a tremendous amount of work. But a quantum computer will just be able to do that work, so it takes away that.
Yes.
So is there a way to safeguard that?
Yes. So there are people working on different ways of kind of modifying the kind of algorithm, the proof of work algorithm that computers use to create these hashes.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of working on ways to modify it so that it is resistant to quantum computers. But do you want to get into like the AI blockchain kind of stuff?
Yes,
there's
let's
some
get
very
into
cool stuff.
AI.
There. Yeah, so it's kind of like it's kind of just the thought that people have been playing around with because we're not ready to implement it yet. But
right.
if you remember, like as a user of this blockchain, you are identified by a public address, this
mm-hmm.
which is a string of numbers.
Right.
And then you're able to kind of modify the maybe or send money from that is stored within that public address
mm-hmm.
using your private key. So these things are just numbers. And an AI could hold those numbers just as well as a human can.
Right.
So what happens is, and it's kind of exciting, kind of scary, is you can now imagine an AI that has control of a public or a private key. And by controlling that private key, they also have access to some public address. And if that public address has money, they'll be able to do anything a human can. So you can imagine in the future having an AI that has control of this private key and is able to maybe contract out work in the physical world. You can imagine an AI designing
mm-hmm.
and then contracting out different companies to build like some building that they designed, and all without a human in the loop, which would be pretty cool. So that's just like a fun little idea, but
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of other aspects where like right now with AI, you need like a human in the loop
mm-hmm.
who kind of gives permission to an AI to do
right.
certain things. Now you can remove the human, and that would just kind of like speed up many different processes.
So this is I think we're definitely talking about either AGI or what we'd call strong AI in the future. Let's step back from the apocalypse into the sort of artificial networks we have right now.
Mm-hmm.
How can we combine these two wonderful things, these artificial networks, these neural networks that we use for so many things, and blockchain? How do they complement each other? Should we use them together? Is there any benefit?
Yeah, there's tons of benefit. There's so many different like aspects that we can touch on, but I think I'll focus the conversation on maybe the home.
Okay, yeah.
Which everyone kind of has, and it's a part of everyone's life. So mm-hmm. With the home, I was mentioning the Nest thermostat before and other things like that. Like, we can kind of allow AI to take control of some of these aspects of our home. So, for example, maybe the temperature, maybe the electricity, mm-hmm. and things like this. And now let's say, taking that idea of an AI that controls a private key, so they're able to do the same things as humans on the blockchain.
Okay.
Let's say maybe you're using a lot of electricity, and your house or the computer, the AI, these things, they take notice of that. The AI holding some money in a private key can now maybe reach out to the electric grid system,
okay. yeah.
and maybe buy more electricity and things like that.
Okay.
And the other way too, let's say a lot of homes today have like solar panels.
Right.
So let's say you're generating a lot of electricity and you have excess.
So you can sell it.
You could sell it. The AI could do this all for you and you don't even need to touch it. It just happens in the background.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, so that's a pretty cool example.
So we've talked a lot about blockchain, and I want to get back to you.
Okay.
So as a Cox student, as a student at the University of British Columbia, what are you currently doing to sort of further blockchain, or even if not further, how are you involved in blockchain either at the university or outside of the university?
Got it. So I think one of the most important things is, for myself and for anyone else who's interested in this space, it's about educating yourself. There's so much to learn. It's for anyone that you talk to, it's just like jumping into a rabbit hole of information. There's just so much to learn, so many different venues to explore, so many different industries that this could impact, and each one requires some level of specialized knowledge. So it's all about educating yourself. I participate and attend a lot of the blockchain at UBC meetups, which is a club on campus that brings in lots of cool speakers, educates people on a lot of different topics related to blockchain.
Sorry, this was the block. It's just blockchain UBC, I'm assuming.
Blockchain at UBC.
Blockchain at UBC. Club at UBC. Join it if you're interested.
Yes, and besides that, I'm actually working for a company right now called Consensus. And they're a venture studio, so basically they work on a ton of different applications in the blockchain space. But the one that I'm working on is actually a platform. It's not a particular application.
Okay.
And it's a digital identity platform. So we've talked a lot today about how important it is to kind of have this, have control of your mm-hmm. money mm-hmm. and your data.
Yeah.
But right now, actually, with like Bitcoin, it's very simple. You actually only are able to manipulate money with your private key. You aren't actually able to store your data yet. So the platform that we're building will hopefully enable people to not only hold all their currencies and things like this, but also store their data and all these things, and then provide permission to people to use it as necessary.
Okay, so you touched on it briefly, but I'm going to prod you again about this. So for someone who's interested in blockchain, so you mentioned at the university we have the blockchain club, blockchain at UBC. Are there some certain websites or maybe a YouTube channel, somewhere where they can, like you said, learn more about blockchain, maybe on their own time or outside of UBC, or for people who aren't at UBC?
Yeah, education, most important part. There's lots of things online, although it can be difficult to know where to start. And if you want, I can share some of that with you.
Yeah, I was just going to say some of your sort of where you started, you know, because obviously you have a personal experience, what worked, what didn't. So if you could just share that.
Yeah, so for me, it was just digging around the internet, clicking from article to article, paper from paper, paper to paper, and just learning everything I can, kind of like picking, slowly building up the puzzle pieces to get a better picture of what is happening in this space. So yeah, you just kind of got to start reading. And besides that, if you're looking for direction, blockchain at UBC is a great place on campus here to begin learning. And as for kind of maybe finding a work or things like that, kind of getting more involved in the space, if that's something you want, lots and lots of companies are hiring for any position imaginable, developer, marketing, all these types of things are available. So there's a lot of opportunity and a lot of people are hiring. So,
well, Matt, I could honestly sit here with you and talk about blockchain for hours, but unfortunately, we are out of time. I really, really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for being here. I know you're a busy guy. Thank you so much for coming here, sharing your knowledge with us. And we hope to have you back on the podcast maybe another day. Just thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.